Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Y'all get the guns, the drugs. From my generation, I'll take the fall. The state, and across the nation, and it's a sin. The guns, the fake, the fraud, they're messing with me. Come on, come on, come on, let's get it out.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Oh, there she is. Okay, we're good. A little bit of a delay on everybody's end, but I think we're good to start. Hello and welcome, January 27th, 2020. At least, barely still the 27th here on the East Coast. Good evening, afternoon, whenever you listen, and welcome into The Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network. I'm your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Yo.
And the busy co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi.
Hello.
All right, Liz, I know your schedule being what it is for tomorrow. What do you say we start with Rumble, and then you can go ahead and let me and Tony handle the show?
Okay, that's cool.
Are you cool with that, Tony?
Yeah.
All right. So, Rumble was this past Sunday, and apparently I can't pick for shit because Le Roman did not lay win, and unfortunately neither did Shayna. Do we want to do kind of a brief rundown of our favorite stuff, or do we just want to hit this with a final reaction, Tony?
Yeah, we don't got time for that.
Okay, well then I guess we're just hitting it with a final reaction, aren't we? Favorite match or moment from the Rumble, Tony?
I have to say the Rumble itself. It was fun from top to bottom. I didn't see many complaints. The ones that I did didn't really hold much water. I enjoyed the Brock portion. I don't think anybody was buried because half the people that he threw out weren't built up enough to be buried. So, and then we got a miraculous win. We got someone who I think was the right choice, the right way. Everything was done really, really well.
Liz?
Yeah, no, I have to agree. I mean, the whole, I enjoyed the whole, you know, show. I can't really pick out one thing that, even like, you know, nitpick on. I thought it was a pretty solid show from top to bottom. The Rumble, the men's Rumble itself, I think, was one of the better ones in recent years. I mean, the first part, you know, got you, like, totally into it. You were angry, you know, you were like, oh, my God, why are they doing this? And then, you know, it switched over and, you know, Drew definitely was the right pick to win it.
I thought the Brock thing went a little too long, a little bit past the expiration date. I get the idea behind having him go through 13 in order to tie Strowman's record from the Greatest Royal Rumble. And technically Strowman's comes with an asterisk because there were 50 people in that one instead of 30. But other than that, I didn't really have any complaints about the men's Rumble either. And the payoff to the Brock segment was probably the best thing in particular about the show. And then we kind of saw that bleed into tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw, which Tony and I will get to here in a little bit. Least favorite match or moment from the Rumble, Tony, you're Greg Watry.
By and large, the pay-per-view was pretty solid, to be honest with you. I think that if there's something that I didn't like, it was just the, you know, it would be like the number five in a top five. You know, it's still a pretty good list, but there's always a number five. And if that's the case, then in this particular situation, I'd have to say the Women's Royal Rumble just didn't hold the same weight. It wasn't important enough for me. And I loved seeing Belair. I loved seeing a lot of faces, actually, but I loved the presence that she felt. The problem is it didn't matter the next day, as we saw tonight. I'm not saying I expected her to show up on Raw, but, you know, it was just kind of in a vacuum. And then, of course, you have the person that won. I'm not really feeling that person as a winner. It's one of those situations where we've talked about many times before. Charlotte can get a title shot literally at any time with the right story, and it doesn't even have to be a good one. She's Charlotte Flair. So the Royal Rumble, I feel, should be used not just to build someone out of obscurity, but help tell a story. So this really, I don't know. It just, in my mind, it didn't do that. And of course, we saw tonight that it didn't carry over to an awesome segment on Raw. It's just more of the same, to be honest with you.
Liz, Greg Watry.
You know, I agree with all of Tony's points about the Women's Rumble itself. Very disappointed in who won it. Mainly for the exact thing that Tony just said. Charlotte didn't really need it based on her status, you know, with the company. Would have been nice to see pretty much anybody else actually win it. But I actually enjoyed the Women's Rumble more than I enjoyed, I think, my least favorite match, if I had to pick one, would be Bayley and Lacey. I just wasn't into it at all. I'm not saying that they didn't do, you know, a good job, but that held less meaning for me or less interest than anything else.
Yeah, Bayley and Lacey sucked. There's no nice way to put it. The match was put in a dead spot on the card. Neither woman was on their game. Lacey in particular looked awful, which is unfortunate because I was of the opinion that Lacey had actually been showing signs of improvement recently, but this was definitely a case of one step forward, three steps back for her, as her Big Four title match opportunity did not go as planned. But regardless, other than that, I thought top to bottom, the Rumble was a pretty solid show with no real down moments except for that match, and everything else that was maybe not as important was kept kind of to a minimum, whereas all of the main matches got the focal points that I felt they deserved. The Men's Rumble, the Women's Rumble, Bryan and Bray, despite the ridiculous stipulation, was really good. So yeah, I'm going to go with Bayley and Lacey as well. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony.
I'm going to go with 8. I mean, the Royal Rumble card, I said last week, is 2 matches. Everything else is just fluff. But a lot of the fluff this last night was pretty good fluff.
So what you're saying is their fluffers are on point.
Yes, that's exactly what I was saying.
I suspected as much. Liz, scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to go with solid 8 as well. I mean, I actually even watched the pre-show, and well, both of those. Well, the first match was ridiculous, but rather ridiculous. That was a good match, but for the first time in a long time, I've actually watched the whole pre-show and the whole Rumble all the way through and enjoyed it. So I'll give it a nice solid 8.
A little bit higher than both of them are. I'm at an 8.5. I thought both matches slight echo, just a heads up. Anyways, like I said, I'm at an 8.5 because I thought that we had the opportunity to have a really strong show, even with the original winners that I had predicted here. But getting the surprise that we got in the Men's Royal Rumble, as well as getting the opportunity that we saw for a couple of showcases in the Women's Rumble, as well as a few other very good matches during the course of the show, I thought that the Rumble more than lived up to the expectations for it, and there wasn't realistically anything that longtime fans could hang their head in disappointment about, because they paid off a lot of the storylines that they had built into the Rumble pay-per-view. Tony, who's your MVP for Sunday night? Tony.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. It was Drew McIntyre. That's 100% sure.
Liz, she's your MVP.
Drew, you definitely can't shoot anybody else.
Can I give an honorable mention to Beth Phoenix? What an absolute badass.
How did she actually get hurt? Because that I missed, I have to be honest, and I didn't look it up.
There was a spot with Bianca in the corner. Bianca threw a strike. Beth whiplashed, but didn't realize how close to the post she was and smacked the back of her head off the ring post.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like what happened with Cesaro's teeth, but to the back of the head.
Gotcha.
Anything you want to say about tonight's episode of Raw or Friday night's episode of SmackDown before you roll out, Liz?
No, I'll hang around for SmackDown. I'll drop off before Raw because we're just soft and we don't want to listen to me weird about that.
Well, no, if you want to be involved, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you.
All right. We actually do have a couple of main talking points for SmackDown, the first of which is the fact that the Bayley and Lacey thing took up a good portion of the show and completely overrid anything else involved in the women's division. Tony, you've said before that you're a fan of them telling overarching stories throughout the course of a show. Do you think that the Bayley-Lacey involvement like we got from this past Friday's episode of SmackDown was an example of that, or do you think they focused too much on Bayley and Lacey with regards to the women's division?
I mean, any focus on Lacey is too much, in my opinion. I just don't – I'm not a fan. But, no, I do appreciate the effort. If they're trying to make it personal, and you saw that in the match, or you attempted to, but even that wasn't done all that well. So it's one of those things where I can appreciate the effort, but the result just didn't pan out, both on SmackDown and at the Royal Rumble.
Liz, same question. Do you think they focus too much on Bayley and Lacey for the women's division, or do you appreciate the effort that they put into making people care about it?
You know, I appreciate the effort because, I mean, we all know the nonsense I say about the not really caring about the women so much, and they have been quite a few times recently that they've actually, you know, become pretty engrossed with it. I think they did a good effort, but there was no payoff. Probably went, you know, a little bit, you know, too far, interrupting, you know, everything under the sun. I think if the match at the Rumble had been better, I think people would have a higher opinion of what, you know, what they did with it. It didn't elevate anything in any way because the match was so lackluster.
Look, I get the idea behind them focusing as much as they did on SmackDown on Bayley and Lacey because they wanted to make it seem like a big deal. But the problem is like Liz said and we talked about earlier, they did not deliver on that at the Royal Rumble. We've seen this opportunity in the past before where they've had entire show build up to one match or take an entire show to build up to a pay-per-view match between the ladies. Trish and Lita when they main evented Raw for the first time. Sasha and Charlotte when they were inside of Hell in a Cell. You see the opportunity to build to these matches organically. You see the opportunity to focus on them enough that you actually are invested, and then the overall in-ring product delivers as well. And like Liz just said, I don't think the in-ring product last night at the Royal Rumble lived up to the hype that they put on those two women going into the Royal Rumble event. Hey, Tony.
Yo.
Another thing that we've talked about on the show before is long matches. How does 27 minutes sound with intros? a six-man tag match from SmackDown as the Usos and Roman Reigns took on Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler, and Robert Roode. The Usos and Reigns pick up the victory when Jimmy, I think, pinned Ziggler with the top rope splash. Do you like the longer matches, or do you think that they should, on a two-hour show, they should focus on having shorter matches that tell a more arcing story?
No, I love long matches. What I don't like is when they're very obviously when they can be condensed to the final 5 minutes of said match. That's when it kind of bothers me, and it happens on Raw too. It wasn't just SmackDown. It also happens on matches that are 10 minutes long. Think of it this way: if you watch a match and there's a commercial break in the middle, and the first half of that match doesn't matter, then you did something wrong. I'm not saying you need to be super obvious and, like, start working the arm before the break goes, and then next thing you know, you have a submission. But it happens a lot with the WWE, and I think it's one of the reasons why people don't find their matches all that engaging. I'm talking about the main shows, because NXT doesn't do this, at least at the TakeOver pay-per-views. But what happens is you watch, like, a match on Raw or SmackDown, and the first 10 minutes, well, in this case, maybe the first 7 minutes, they don't really matter. All that matters is that flurry of offense and that high that you get when you watch them, like, you know, basically do poetry in the ring. What sucks is that if it doesn't matter, then you're left asking what the point was of it all. And I never want to ask that. That's why when you watch a match like anything on a TakeOver card, everything matters. And we've talked about that before, too. Literally everything matters, from the very first lockup to the from the intros to the eye lock that they have with each other to the very ending of the match. It all matters. But when you watch a match like this, nothing matters until the very end because they're just going through the motions. So, yeah, I'm all for long matches. I just need them to have a little bit of weight.
Liz, same question here. 27 minutes when you count the introductions and the actual in-ring content in order to get to the finish with the Usos and Roman taking the victory here. Do you like the fact that they put the longer matches on SmackDown, or do you think that SmackDown should focus on shorter matches since it only has the two-hour time slot?
I don't think they should have a dedicated, you know, shorter match time frame. I think there are certain storylines and certain, you know, moments where a longer match is definitely going to affect the story and move things forward and really add to it. It's very hard to follow Tony sometimes because he says everything quite perfectly. Did not love that story he had, Tony. I can't really, you know, answer that. But, you know, he's right. But it's definitely, I think, you know, depends on, you know, what they're doing in the match and the story they're telling. If it's just dragged out, then it does seem kind of pointless and a waste of time.
All right, for quick hits, we'll go to Liz first here so that way she can get in first comments instead of just verbatiming Tony here. Main event match was Shawn Morrison and Big E. Morrison moves to 2-0 in his return in the WWE. Excuse me. Morrison and Kofi. Morrison moves to 2-0 in his return, pinning Kofi with Starship Kane. Obviously setting up a eventual SmackDown tag team, easy for me to say, title match between the two teams here. Do you like the dirt sheet as the number one contenders, Liz?
Do I like the what? I'm sorry.
The dirt sheet, Miz and Morrison as the number one contenders to the SmackDown tag titles.
Okay, is that the name I didn't realize? No, I really don't know. I mean, they have a history together, obviously, that they can play on and that works well for them. I mean, they work well together already. I feel they have that chemistry. I just don't think that they have such an amazing team presence right now on SmackDown that I can really say, like, oh, no, that's horrible. I mean, like, the Usos, you know, came back, why aren't they? But we've seen the New Day and the Usos 50,000 times. I mean, we'll probably see it again at some point. So, honestly, do I think that the tag team division needs something? I don't mind it. I think if they have a feud, if they have some ongoing things, and the two of them, you know, team up and take them on, that's fine with me. It's no different than other things that they've done. And look who's the tag champ on Raw. That makes even less sense. I mean, it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense.
Tony, same question. Do you like the Dirt Sheet as the number one contenders to the SmackDown Tag Team titles?
I don't know, man. I'm a little... I think the problem is where the SmackDown titles lie in the hierarchy of titles. There's this really big gap between the big belts and, like, the U.S. title or the IC title and the tag team championships. They feel completely unimportant. Like, just completely unimportant. They don't matter, Raw or SmackDown. And because of this, when you see people challenge for them that you feel are just a little bit above it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't register. So for me, The Miz is a main event player. John Morrison, I think, could potentially be that, and I think a lot of people see him as that. So for them to turn their attention towards the titles, it just doesn't ring true because they're just not important. Now, granted, if they were to win them and add a little bit of prestige and have continuous tag team matches and maybe help rebuild SmackDown, because when you look at SmackDown, I mean, how many teams do we got here? Not a lot. I'm not opposed to them going after the tag team title. It just feels kind of weird because I feel that they're a little bit higher than that. Similar to tonight, like Owens and Samoa Joe, I don't see a reason why they would want the tag team titles. I see a reason why they would want to beat Seth and Buddy Murphy. That makes sense to me. And that's a good enough reason for me to be okay with the match. But the tag team titles realistically shouldn't mean all that much to them, especially as a team, because they're not a team. And then you got the Viking Raiders. Like, they're not even mad. I don't. Are they mad? They're probably mad. Do Vikings get them?
Well, they did attack the Authors of Pain backstage tonight.
Yeah, and then, you know, they're going to stand up for because they can't get an automatic rematch, which they thankfully said. So it was explained. It's just, again, those titles just, you know, the red and blue pennies, they just don't hold that much prestige as, you know, well, I don't even want to say as they used to. They don't got it.
Damn pennies. Bastards. All right, Liz, our go-home segment for this episode of SmackDown was the contract signing between Bryan and The Fiend. We see another horror element to The Fiend character, where he stabs himself in the hand to sign the contract in blood after starting as Firefly Funhouse Bray and giving people kind of a history lesson as to why he's so pissed off at Bryan. The red light was present for the contract signing as well, but disappeared as soon as he left. Thankfully, the red light was not at the pay-per-view. What did you make of the interaction between Wyatt and Bryan on SmackDown? Did you like the effect of signing the contract with his own blood? Do you think it was too far?
You know, I had no problem with the problem with that. I don't have any problem with blood in wrestling. I know they stopped it for, you know, quite some time for 1,000 different reasons. I didn't mind it. I thought it, you know, took it to a new level. I think The Fiend is definitely a character that has to keep not changing it up, but doing, you know, different things to keep the character, the whole psychotic, you know, thing going. It was definitely one of the better contract signings. You know, we've seen them time. They all end in a brawl. 99% of them anyway. I liked the whole my mind blanking. The fun house part where he's like, oh, I'm not wrestling you, it should be, you know, I like that event and just the scene that came out and Bryan getting his little butt whooped and everything. I thought it was a decent segment. It was like, definitely one of my favorite contract signings in a while, and then a very good build up into the match. I think that I was one of the few people that was looking forward to a strap match. I know a lot of people to go forward or backwards to the Rumble for a second were complaining about it and whatnot, but I thought it was well. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a decent build up to it.
Tony, same question. What did you think of the segment, the contract signing segment between Bray and Brian? Did you like the blood effect for signing the contract? Do you think they went too far with it? And what did you think of the interaction between Brian and Bray during the segment itself?
So it's Brian. You know, he's anything he does is gold. He's probably the first feud with the Fiend that I'm enjoying. So I didn't. This segment didn't bother me. Him signing in blood is over the top, but it's a fucking wrestler that has a mask on a belt. I don't think there's a over the top that we can reach with the Fiend. So it didn't bother me. Yeah, it was fine. It was a fine segment that led to a great match, so I'm cool with it.
All right, Liz, overall thoughts for SmackDown since you won't be sticking around for the end of the show?
I don't think it was the greatest, you know, go-home show that we've ever had, and I think we really haven't. It wasn't horrible. It was probably, it's definitely better than parts of War, I think, but in terms of a go-home show, I think it was quite, you know, hit and miss, definitely with the, you know, the women's stuff, you know, was good. I actually, you know, enjoyed it. It was trying to build it up, but like you said, that it just kind of failed. It was decent, I guess, for the go-home show. I enjoyed it. The 2 hours seemed to fly by, really, even with all, you know, dominated by the one match and the women stuff. I can't really complain about it. There wasn't anything I'd go back and watch, though. I mean, there's usually something on any of the shows that I'll go back and like, oh, let me watch that, you know, again, or check something on YouTube or look for a different angle or something about it. They didn't really have anything like that for me.
All right. You have a good rest of your night, Liz. We'll see you next Monday, hopefully.
No, you know, I'll definitely be there. Oh, well, I will say that.
All right.
I'll just give you a very quick, War was horrible, so it's probably a good thing I'm not staying around. It was just absolute, except for the very end, which I will can't wait to hear what you guys say about it. Except for the very end, it was an absolute garbage show. So, all right, I'll catch you guys later.
See you, Liz. I actually disagree with her. I, by and large, enjoyed most of Raw tonight, but we'll talk about
that.
Well,
you know what, Harry? Let's talk about it.
I'm guessing you didn't, Tony.
We'll get there.
All right. Well, the original thing that I wanted to discuss was the fallout from McIntyre winning the Rumble, and obviously, with McIntyre's victory, that sets him up to challenge the champion of his choosing. He makes it no secret who he's challenging, as he announces point blank at the start of the show that he's going after Lesnar and the WWE Championship. Wait, which one does Lesnar have? Lesnar has the WWE Championship. Okay. I get that. It's belt A and belt B, if we're being honest, but regardless. McIntyre then says that he's in the mood to hand out some more beatings tonight after not getting his share during the Rumble, and issues an open challenge that is answered by both members of the OC, to which we have a handicap match that McIntyre wins by pinning both members of the OC after a claymore to each of them. Post-match, McIntyre is celebrating the victory, having pitched Anderson and Gallows out of the ring. We'll talk about Styles in a second. When he is attacked from behind by Brock Lesnar and laid out in the middle of the ring with an F5 to get us started on the road to WrestleMania. All right, Tony, what did you think of the opening 20 minutes of the show?
Awesome. Drew was the right choice, and his attitude, his demeanor, his promo, everything just felt so natural. And it's the first time in a long time that a face felt like a face. And it felt bigger than it should have been. The WWE has a tendency to start feuds that just feel kind of either shoehorned in, like an example would be how suddenly the upper brass quote-unquote cared about Becky Lynch facing Asuka when that had never been mentioned before, or they have a tendency to just assume that we want to see these two people. An example of that would be Roman Reigns in anybody, and make it the most important thing of the show. This was something that I feel was somewhat organically grown. Even though this is all scripted and all written, there's just this feel of like, finally, and like, oh my God, yes, they're going to do it. Or they're like, when Daniel Bryan was coming up and they were finally giving him the opportunity, you just had this feeling of like, you're, thank you. Like, I don't know if you're listening or if you just, you and I are on the same page right now, but thank you, because this feels so good. And the perfect foil to that is Brock fucking Lesnar, because he just pisses everybody off. That's why the Royal Rumble worked the way it did, and that's why tonight worked the way it did, because for the first time and seemingly forever, you have a face who is just really happy to be there. Very, very, he feels like he deserves it. He's gone through a lot to do it. There's a story there that I don't know if they're going to tell. They don't have to, but if they did, I think people would be interested. And then you have the evil bad guy. It's like fucking Wrestling 101, and they haven't done that in a very long time, because every single face that they have is an asshole, and every heel that they have is justified. So it's just this weird quasi-world that doesn't work out. And tonight, the first 20 minutes was not like that at all. It was seemingly old school. Royal Rumble winner is happy, is excited, squashes some jobbers, and then Brock Lesnar, the evil doer, the bad guy, comes and one-ups him, and yet again, you feel like, damn, maybe he's got his number. I don't know. It's just, I don't know, Harry. I don't know. I'm, you know, we've talked about this for years. There's that little shot of adrenaline that you get after the Royal
Rumble. WrestleMania high.
When you and I are just a little bit nicer and a little bit more into the product, and a little bit more forgiving. But I don't think that I needed to be nice or unforgiving tonight. It was just, it was a good moment. It was the right person, the right good guy, the right bad guy. Simple storytelling, effective usage of people who don't matter, i.e. Anderson and Gallows, and it worked for me.
So in other words, so far so good is what you're saying.
Yep.
All right, let's continue the trend. Holy shit, Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens might be the smartest baby faces ever. Allow me to explain. We see Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy defend the Raw Tag Team titles tonight against Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens. Obviously, Rollins and Murphy retain. Joe gets an actual injury. We'll talk about that in a few moments as well, with the injury bug apparently biting the company hard right now. But before the match, we see Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens confront Rollins and Murphy about the lack of presence of AOP at ringside. They show AOP on the Videotron, and Kevin Owens says, yeah, because we don't work in a company with a bunch of cameramen who couldn't have recorded that earlier today. I lost it. Smartest baby face ever. Rollins confirms that it's a live satellite feed, and then Joe thanks them for officially giving away the AOP's location so that the Viking Raiders can attack the AOP as revenge for last week. The match itself sees Samoa Joe get injured and Rollins and Murphy pick up the win, but I think the important thing to discuss here is the fact that it was Murphy that got the victory in order to retain the tag team titles tonight. Let's talk twofold here, Tony. I know you've mentioned that you don't think that Joe and Owens should be going after the Raw tag team titles, and I can agree with that, other than wanting to get their hands on Murphy and Rollins. However, the thought that I have here that I want to ask you about is, storyline-wise, the continuation of the progression of the storyline here, it makes sense that they would want to take something away from Rollins the same way that Rollins took the Royal Rumble away from them, does it not?
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I said. There's a bit of a reason for it. You know, it's not all like, oh, we want the tag team titles. It's more so, I hate Seth Rollins and everything that he stands for, so I'm going to take the possessions that he has, which, I mean, I'm okay with. It also lends more credence to my
reality that the tag team titles are somewhat secondary to everything else they want to do here.
Well, I mean, in fairness, it's pretty much that way throughout the company, throughout the history of, well, ever, more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, the tag team titles haven't mattered in this company for decades. Maybe the highlight of the Edge, Christian, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, Bubba Ray, Devon Dudley era.
They have little spurts, you know, little moments where they decide to matter. And I think they only matter because of the people that are wearing them, not the other way around, which there's a balance there.
I.e. teams like the Revival and the Usos actually give a damn about the tag belts. So
yeah,
you're okay with this segment as well then?
Yeah.
All right, so we're 2 for 2. And those are the 2 main talking points that I have. Now I'm going to add a 3rd major talking point because I don't think we can ignore the way that we went off of the air for Raw tonight.
Nope.
Edge's in-ring promo to talk about his return at the Royal Rumble. Randy Orton coming out to discuss things with Edge and tease the reformation of Rated RKO, again, tag team division that doesn't matter. However, instead, Orton lays out Edge with an RKO, and then after teasing, Pillmanizing the neck of Edge, instead goes with a concerto for a much more personal touch. I love this segment. I thought it was fantastic. You get actual heat on Randy Orton. You get Edge as a sympathetic babyface in his big return to the company. You had genuine booing and reactions from the crowd there. No, yay, Randy, get him! Actual people pissed off that Randy Orton was doing this to Edge on Edge's return to the company. And you're going to tell the story going into WrestleMania that Edge is out for blood. Tony, your thoughts on how we went off the air for Raw tonight?
Beautiful. You know why? Because once Orton came out, I can guarantee that more than half the people watching knew exactly what was going to happen. I bet people could even predict down to the concerto what was going to happen. And it didn't matter. Because your heartstrings were tugged, you believed everything Edge said. Again, a face and heel dynamic that is just, it makes sense. You know, there's a reason why we could stand behind Edge and why we could stand behind Drew McIntyre. Even though just a couple months ago, Drew was being a dastardly heel, there's a reason why. Because these stories transcend the norm of what we're so used to, which is shitty, half-assed promos from faces that are basically just jerks. There's a reason, and then you look at what we saw tonight, the line is drawn. It is black, and it is hard, and it is thick. That's what she said. And it's there.
Diggity.
Because it's present. And when you see stuff like that, you get to pick a side. You can even pick Orton if you wanted to, but you just know that you're a dick if you do, which is fine. This story is one that, I mean, it's been a long time coming. It's one that we never thought we would see, and now that we see it, we're anxious. And I think it was well done because the people that are a part of it care as a performer, and also the story, it just is engaging. You know, I'm anxious to see if Orton, you know, it does the whole, you know, you were supposed to stay down, you're not coming back here to take my shine, blah, 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 which, again, is cliche, but makes sense. And we see the redemption story. We see Edge coming back from something that should not have, you know, he shouldn't have been able to come back from. And he just wants to have a good time, and he thinks he brings up these, like, dream matches. And then Orton comes back, he's like, no, we're not doing that. I'm going to make sure you can't wrestle again because this is my territory. Whatever, you know, whatever route they want to go, I think it's going to work, unless they go super dramatic.
Okay, let's talk
about
the couple
about
things
these,
that... Well, no, go ahead.
When we talk about these big, when we talk about these big story, these big matches, Drew versus Brock, Orton versus Drew, they feel like WrestleMania matches, and we're not even there yet. That's, to me, that's beautiful. To me, that's amazing, because, like, I mean, Harry, the last few years, it just hasn't felt Mania-ish. You know, we get that hype, we get that love, but I think that's us creating it more so than them. Then you get Raw like tonight, and you're like, oh shit, they actually have a plan.
Alright, so let's talk about a couple of things that we're probably going to agree on the negative side of things, shall we?
Sure.
Fuck Charlotte winning the Rumble. fuck everything to do with Charlotte and the Kabuki Warriors tonight. Way to devalue your women's tag team champions by making it look like they can't win a match unless the other one gets involved. The match with Asuka was solid. I'm not going to complain about the quality of the match. I am going to complain about the finish. Charlotte doesn't need that win. Asuka needs a rehabilitation after the loss to Becky at the Royal Rumble. Asuka and Charlotte could get into a little mini feud, and you could have Charlotte take the win back at the Elimination Chamber to solidify her number one contendership based on the fact that Asuka is a previous Women's Royal Rumble winner who was not in the Women's Royal Rumble last night. Instead, Charlotte looks like she has Asuka beaten when they go with the generic disqualification finish off of Kairi Sane interfering with the Insane Elbow. And to make matters worse, and because the match itself actually wasn't bad, Charlotte's promo before the match. What the fuck? Tony?
Look, man, I've said it for a very long time. Charlotte on the microphone, not my cup of tea. Charlotte winning the Royal Rumble, not my cup of tea. In fact, I don't, you know what, I don't even like any type of tea, but this tea I despise. She's just not interesting. She's not interesting to me. And her, I mean, you're going to draw this out for weeks just for her to choose Becky. Did I see an inkling of Becky going heel, or was that just being her regular cocky self? I'm not interested in a heel Becky versus face Charlotte. I'm not interested in any Becky versus any Charlotte, really. So, I don't know. I don't know why she won. I'm not saying she's not a great athlete. It's just, it doesn't feel new. It doesn't feel fresh. And her character just kind of annoys me.
All right, the two squash matches. Necessary evils after the Rumble, perhaps. I do like the kind of shift in character with Aleister Black and the fact that he got some mic time afterwards and saying that he's going to start taking the fight to people now, which I appreciate. The Eric Rowan thing, it is what it is. Rowan getting partially rehabilitated after getting tossed like a biatch by Lesnar in about 7 seconds on Sunday. We talked many times about the fact that we don't necessarily care for squash matches, but I think they still have a place in modern wrestling.
I think my biggest issue with squash matches will forever be the ones that are one of many. You know, there was an argument in the comment section regarding Black, how, and I've never heard this argument before, I thought it was interesting, where they claimed that they feel that squash matches will get Black over way more than any long drawn out match with another competitor. They compared it to basically 50-50 booking, even though one person is undoubtedly going to be coming out on top. I thought it was an interesting take, mainly because of the evidence that they had. Their evidence was, let's say a casual viewer is flipping through the channel and they see Black, it's going to be much more of an impact to see this guy kick some dude's face off and just, like, win a match like nothing than it would be for them to engage in a 20-minute match where both people are skilled and look great. Now, I don't agree or disagree with this sentiment. I kind of want to get your thoughts on it. But mine are simply that I think it's because they're dependent upon the casual viewer to make that decision, because you and I will take a fucking Murphy versus Black match any day over a squash match. Literally any day. But a casual viewer, is that really what they want? Or I just thought it was a really interesting take. I wish I remembered the commenter's name.
I think that there's a argument for both sides of that coin, because remember the old days where squash matches were the, what's the word I'm looking for here? The nom de plume, I believe would be the proper way to put it.
Yeah.
For Monday Night Raw. They were exactly what you were going into Monday Night Raw expecting. You might get one competitive match on an episode of Raw and then like three or four squash matches in order to establish, oh, these are the other people that when you buy the bigger shows, you'll get to see them for an extended period against other people that matter. The thing with the squash matches tonight with Aleister Black is you're getting Aleister Black a chance to get back on television after being eliminated from the Rumble in a dastardly manner, which he addresses, but spinning it in a way that Aleister turns the blame on himself for what happened at the Royal Rumble, which I thought was an interesting take. I agree is that a match like Aleister Black versus Buddy Murphy for 20 minutes is going to draw in pretty much any viewer. That being said, I think the hardcore fans are much more likely to want to view the longer length matches, whereas the casuals, if you see Aleister Black doing what he did to Jobby McJobberson tonight, just kicking his face clean off, then you're going to be more intrigued to learn more about him than you would be seeing him go back and forth with somebody who you would have no investment in between him or Buddy Murphy if you're just a casual fan.
Right.
So, I mean, I can see the argument for both sides of that. I personally prefer the longer length matches. We've talked about this before. I think part of that is my independent wrestling fandom and the fact that you get longer matches on the independent scene. But that's because on the independent scene, you see people using these longer matches to get their personalities over. Whereas on the WWE, a lot of times the longer matches are they're basically just to fill time a lot of times. All right. Liv and Lana, it was mercifully short. I do like Liv's new ring gear. She's got that going for her.
Yeah, nice little Black Widow look. Honestly, Harry, there's no such thing as too short or short for this. I just want it over with. I hate everything Lana does in and outside of the ring. I'm sure she's a great person. Sorry, CJ, but I have no interest.
All right. The other thing that we're probably going to agree on, the 24/7 title. Who the fuck is Riddick Moss and why am I supposed to care? And I say this as somebody who knows who Riddick Moss is.
Well, he's an offensive lineman, Harry.
Yeah, who truth hit with the okey-doke to be able to regain the title tonight before Mojo put him right back in his place and got back the 24/7 title. Can we just mercy kill this belt already? Like, it's run its course.
Considering he's constantly defending the title, I don't know why he has an offensive lineman. I'm just saying.
Interesting theory.
Actually, no. So here's the thing with that, and I'll make it short. I'm not opposed to the idea. It brings a new face to the main roster, and Mojo's idea of I'm defending this title like it should be, that's a good move. I appreciate that. The problem is,
agreed.
He makes this grand statement, and then what he does, he ends up winning a match and then losing the belt like nothing. So okay, we have this man who's like making this statement of like I'm better than all of these fucking idiots, and then proceed to treat him exactly like all of those idiots. It just if they let that entire thing out, I would have been okay with this segment. I really would have been. I'd have been like, all right, it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but okay, at least they're doubling down on what they want to do here. And I would venture to say that having the offensive lineman was Mojo's idea, you know, because he's a football head and, you know, his Gronkowski ties in and all that. That's, in my opinion, a wrestler trying to do the best with what he's given. So although I don't have, you know, validity behind that, I can't prove it, I do think it was Mojo's idea, and this goes to show that I'm standing by him to this day. I've been doing this for a couple years now. I think Mojo has something. He just hasn't been able to put all the pieces together yet. So this, I think, was a part in that. He brought something to the table that was different enough to matter, and then they go and have R-Truth roll him up like nothing. It just really bugged me. A lot.
Here's the problem that I had with Mojo bringing out Riddick Moss as his second. You just cut this promo last week about being a fighting champion and defending the title, and if anybody wants to step up, they can go ahead and step up. And then you're giving yourself someone to hide behind. You're giving creative somebody to hide you behind.
Uh-huh.
I think that it takes away from what he said last week by having the character introduced tonight with Riddick Moss, because it's giving him an out. It's giving him somebody that, in this instance, once Truth was able to sneak in and take the title from him, if Riddick Moss isn't there, Truth escapes with the title.
Yeah. Which, unfortunately,
so
gets the gimmick of the belt over more than any wrestler.
That was my biggest issue with it here is the fact that they immediately devalue what Mojo said last week about wanting to make it a fighting championship by giving him somebody to hide behind.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so this is the part where I think we're going to disagree, Tony, because I read the Raw report and I saw that you were not a fan of this match. The last thing that we have to discuss for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw is the Rey Mysterio and MVP match. Yes, MVP was off tonight. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. He did not look great tonight. That being said, I'm more excited about MVP coming back, at least on a part-time basis, then I am disappointed that he's back, because I still think that there's something left in the tank for him. I don't think he reached his full level of possibility when he was there on this first run with the company. And I think having another veteran presence for these young guys to work with regards to the WWE style would do them favors down the road. Overall,
okay.
Overall, what were your impressions of MVP here, and where do you think they go from here with him?
What Raw was it where they had a whole bunch of people? Was it like a Raw reunion or a 50th anniversary? I don't know. It was a show where they had a bunch of names, right? And I was super let me preface this first. I loved MVP. I thought he was awesome. A little clunky, you know, but the character was on point. And he was just he was a breath of fresh air every time he came out. His feud with Matt Hardy. He was in a SmackDown roster that was just like burgeoning with talent, and he was a part of it. He wasn't different from it. So like big MVP mark, love him. Honestly, I remember meeting him, thought he was the greatest person ever. Like the dude's just got that, you know. He just seems like such a homie. Like I would love to hang out with him. But anyways,
he feels like a superstar,
and also very genuine. Like that's him. You know that's MVP. That's Montavious Porter, you know, and he runs with it, really. So when this Raw came up and I saw him playing poker with the APA, I was so mad. I thought I was going to get at least something, but he was just there. Like, he was just there, and I don't even know if they mentioned it. He was just there, and it bugged the shit out of me. So when he came out for the Royal Rumble, I popped, Harry. You know I'm not a man that you can make pop really, really often, you know? Like, Michael Ornelas hates going to wrestling shows with me because I just sit there. Now, I'm fully engaged. I am watching everything, but I am so engulfed in the match, that's just how I fan. That's what I do. So if you could get me to jump up out of a chair in a public place and scream ballin', you're doing something right, okay? Tonight, it wasn't so much that there was, you know, that he sucked or that he was clunky or that he shouldn't have came back. I was okay with him returning. He was a little bit off, but it wasn't just him. You know, Ray was off too. Ray is almost always off. It's just he's so good at a lot. It's like if he does he's a really good, like, B-plus wrestler. And I don't mean that in the Stephanie McMahon, Daniel Bryan thing. I mean the boy can work and he can move and he's so fluid. But because of how quickly he moves, there's a lot of mistakes that happen. We're forgiving of those because he's Rey fucking Mysterio, and the matches are almost always great. The problem is when you have someone like Rey and you have someone like MVP, they don't always mesh well. And in fact, they clash more than they mesh, and I think that's just what happened tonight. Small miscommunications that created a match that wasn't all that great. Do I want MVP back? Yes. Am I excited about it? Fuck yes. Do I think he's going to do, you know, great things with, you know, new names and stuff? Yeah, I do. I really do. So I'm all for it. I hope that tonight doesn't get him in any type of trouble or make them think differently about his future, because I think he does still have some gas left in the tank, and I'm excited to see it. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. We don't disagree, basically. I get where you could gather that with my report, but no, I think we're on the same page with that as well.
Okay, let me ask you a question here. Do you think the fact that Ray got knocked a little loopy early in the match put us in a situation where the match came off as clunky as it did?
Yeah, I mean, there was a breakdown in communication. Ray couldn't tell him what the next move was or what they were going to do, so MVP had to be the ring general, and maybe he's just not used to that. Maybe it's been a long time. Also, if he was aware, Ray could have given him directions for something completely different, because, you know, when you're knocked out, you don't know what the hell you're doing or saying.
Which I think that becomes the issue at hand here for the MVP Rey Mysterio match. It's not necessarily that it was a bad match. It's just that it had an unfortunate circumstance that caused it. Similar to the the tag team title match as well with Samoa Joe. And that's kind of one of the things that I wanted to touch on here, because it happened during the Royal Rumble as well with AJ Styles potentially separating his shoulder. We talk about it all the time on the show. It's not ballet. It's not for everybody. It's eventually the wear and tear of this business is going to take its toll on your body here. People like Ray, it's happening a little bit more as they get more and more advanced into their career. Styles has been fortunate. He hasn't had a ton of injury issues, but the attempted backflip sell of the spear at the Royal Rumble came back to bite him in the ass when he landed on his shoulder. Samoa Joe going for a dive, that elbow suicida that he does all the fucking time, and it looked like he just clipped his foot on the rope and came up a little bit short and landed a little bit on his forehead. Accidents happen, but at the same time, safety first. So I think I would have been better off with them postponing the match between Ray and MVP and saving it for an episode down the road when Ray was back to 100% and they could tell a more cohesive story than the almost half-hearted effort that we got tonight due to the injury toll.
Well, this is the occasion where you use a jobber. You're bringing back someone we haven't seen in a long time. He's got some moves that are like specialty moves that you want to see. You want to see that swinging leg neck breaker. You want to see the ball and elbow drop. You want to see him do the, you know, the fun stuff that he does. And then that's it. MVP's back. Let's wait a little bit because, you know, Ray versus MVP could very well be a feud. Ray, you know, when you watch stuff like this, you're like, I thought Ray was worried about Andrade. Now he's not. Now he doesn't care. What's going on there? So yeah, this was, I think, just a badly timed match.
All right, to speak about last thing to discuss from the show here, and then it has a caveat that just came out on 411 Mania to discuss as well. Andrade and Humberto Carrillo having an immediate rematch tonight on Raw. Andrade appears to be in trouble after Carrillo hits the moonsault until Zelina Vega gets physically involved and causes the disqualification. Humberto Carrillo goes absolutely apeshit after the match and beats the hell out of Andrade, including getting revenge for the hammerlock DDT on the concrete to lay out Andrade with a wonderful sell job by Zelina on the impact as well, I might add, thus letting Humberto stand tall and taking Andrade off of television. Two-parter here, Tony. One, are you surprised that they gave Carrillo the chance to shine tonight instead of Sunday at the Rumble? Two, does Andrade's potential wellness violation, which is being reported on 411 Mania, lead to a change in direction for the company after Andrade had retained basically cleanly on Sunday?
It's really hard to shine at the Royal Rumble unless they have follow-up, and they weren't going to follow it up. So I'm glad that he was able to shine tonight. I don't necessarily agree with the hammerlock DDT onto the cement. It seems way too heelish for Carrillo. I didn't like it. As far as the wellness violations, no, they're not going to change paths. Is this his second one?
First.
Okay, then yeah, nothing's going to change. He's going to get a suspension, and that's about it. And I mean, again, this could be one of those things where it's just a substance that they. There, you know, he didn't get a prescription in time, or he didn't. You know, I don't always sign off to like homeboys doing the worst thing possible. You know what I mean? I find that as a disservice to the wrestler. It could be something that we don't know, something that's easily explainable, but they have to do what they have to do. So I don't really think that anything bad's gonna happen, or that they're gonna change directions. I'm gonna miss him. I'm gonna miss Zelina too.
I wonder if Zelina will still be around because of the fact of her husband still being on the road as well. Or do you think that this leads to Alistair being written off the television for at least a couple of weeks as well?
No, I mean, there's no reason for her to be on TV, but there's also no reason for him to be off of TV.
Very well. I believe that's everything to discuss from tonight's episode of Raw. Did you have anything else from the show that stood out that you wanted to talk about?
Kelly. My God.
It's never a fan of her, still not. Did absolutely nothing for
you know,
me. Honestly, I would have preferred the other name that was rumored in her place instead of Kelly.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. So did she took Sasha's place. No, I have a thing for the petite, and that's, you know, definitely Kelly.
Well, I was referring more specifically to the fact that they actually tried to get Victoria to come back for the Women's Rumble.
That would have been amazing.
I love me some Victoria.
Although
they also tried. Go ahead.
What I found weird tonight was an observation that I made. How, I don't know, maybe we were not as mature, so it kind of just flew by us. But Jerry Lawler gushing over Kelly when she was 19 was a lot less creepy than Jerry Lawler doing it now. And that doesn't make any sense. But I don't know. It's just something I felt like when I was younger and she was just starting. She was 19, I believe, when she started. And Lawler was being his Lawler self. And it was just like, huh, that makes sense. That's funny. But now it's just weird. I don't know. I don't know. I can't describe it because both of them should be weird. I should be offended by both types, but.
All right. I'll tell you why it's a little bit more offensive now than it was then. Because now we know Kelly's too old for him.
Hey.
In all sincerity, though, there's been talk about Kelly coming back to the company for a while now. Do you think there's anything to it? And in this day of the wrestler in the women's division, do you think a diva such as Kelly would fit in as a full-time employee?
No. She's gorgeous, man, but no. No, she's I don't think that she's got the length. I mean, you know what? What am I saying? We're glorifying the women's division right now. It's ass. She'd be fine.
Let me throw an idea out there for you and see if you can understand where I'm coming from with this for her. If she does come back, I think you almost have to make her a heel and go the Eva Marie route with her, no?
I mean, I hope no one goes the Eva Marie route, but Kelly could be a fun heel. Man, when I tell you I hated that person, oh my God. I bet I could pull up reports right now that just say how much I despise her.
See, I thought Eva was effective at what she did. And
nope.
The NXT run that she had with Bayley was fucking awesome.
She was a horrible wrestler that never learned anything. They tried to mask it with a story. The story was good. The person involved was not. She never cared about wrestling. Some people just aren't made
for
it.
She was too busy trying to go on to show her tits on Celebrity Big Brother. Real thing that happened, by the way.
She made the shit out of me.
I think that wraps this up, Tony. You ready for a final reaction for SmackDown at Raw?
Yeah, the only thing Eva Marie ever did awesome was laying underneath AJ Lee.
Jesus. I'm not in the studio or I'd play the off-putting sound effect for you right now, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
All right, real quick. Appropriate with the long black and hard comment, given that we are quagmire days away from WrestleMania. I just wanted to point that out from earlier when both of us started giggling at the that's what she said.
Giggity.
I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that I'm somehow like 11 years old mentally still. But yeah. 69 days away from WrestleMania. Giggity. Alright. Alright. Let's get to a final reaction for SmackDown and Raw, shall we?
Let's do it.
Favorite match or moment between the two shows?
I'm going to go with the closing moment of Raw. Drew McIntyre's speech was a close second, but you got to love that ooh, fire feud.
Aw, Puddin.
Hi, Boo.
I think I'm going to go with McIntyre's opening and the actual, and especially when you combine it with the way that he the celebration from Sunday night as well. Like, he talked about portraying a character. I don't know if you listened to After the Bell with Corey Graves or not.
I read it.
He talked about
what you're talking about.
He talked about portraying a character when he was the Scottish psychopath because that wasn't who he was. He talked about being this guy that was all buddy-buddy with like King with Baron Corbin and Bobby Lashley, but that's not who he is. This smarmy, smart-ass wisecracker that just goes in and beats people up, that's who Drew Galloway, that's who Drew McIntyre is. And you can tell that he is having the time of the life basically portraying himself as an upscaled version on television nowadays. I believe it was no less of a source than Dwayne The Rock Johnson who said that the best wrestlers are those who are able to take their own personalities and turn them up to 11 for television. Greg Watry for the two shows, Tony.
I'm going to go with the R-Truth 24/7 moment. Liv and Lana, their match was serviceable, so I can't knock them, even though I don't want anything to do with Lana. The 24/7 thing, specifically the roll-up, was just it was too annoying for me to appreciate.
I'm going to take a page from your playbook here, Tony. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The absolute wasting of the Street Profits in the backstage segments.
Man. Really, though.
One more time for those in the back.
There's just so much there. There's like, so in like that 3-minute thing, there's little morsels of awesomeness. When Ford was like pretending to be all cute, that was funny. But it's wrapped around this shit sandwich. You can't even get to the meat of it. There's something there. They got it. That's for sure.
Can I give credit to Angelo Dawkins, though, for the beatboxing at the Royal Rumble for the theme songs? That was pretty dope.
Yeah, that was cool.
All right. Scale of 1 to 10 for SmackDown and Raw, Tony.
SmackDown is going to get a 7. Raw, I'm going to give it an 8.
Oh, so despite your claims that you thought Raw was a crap show, you're still giving it a really high score. I see.
No. Let's get this straight. You assumed that I thought it was a crap show. I never said that. I said, let's find out. I said, let's see.
Oh, so maybe
I'll
Liz was
that,
the one who thought it was the crap show.
Yeah, Liz thought it was horrible, and you thought I was going to agree with her. And throughout the show, you found out that I agreed more with you.
Now I feel bad for assuming. I made an ass out of me. I asked me, Tony.
It's okay. I'm already an ass, so.
I gave SmackDown a 6.5. I thought that the 6-man tag match was too long for what it was, that you could have told the same story in about half the time and then used the other time to actually get somewhere else with a couple of your B storylines on the show. And then I did like the way they went off the air with the Jomo and Kofi Kingston match followed by the contract signing. I thought those two segments back-to-back were both really good, but the 6-man tag match overstayed its welcome, and then they tried way too hard with Bayley and Lacey with what we now know the end result of that was. Tonight's episode of Raw, yeah, I'm right there with you, Tony. It's an 8. It may even be an 8.5. Disappointing with the MVP thing, but we talked about the fact that Ray got injured early, so I'm not going to hold that against either man, and I'm going to hope that they get an opportunity to rectify the situation. The 24/7 title, man, it is what it is. Like I said earlier, we should just mercy kill this belt and be done with it. I think Mojo would make a perfectly competent Intercontinental or United States, I guess, since it's Raw, United States champion. There's no reason for him to be wasting his time in the 24/7 division with the parade of geeks that's infesting it. And then you had two absolute money segments with McIntyre's open and then the Edge Orton close. Those, like you said earlier, Tony, felt like genuine WrestleMania season segments. And they got you hyped as fuck for the build to Lesnar-McIntyre for the WWE Championship and what will probably be a no-holds-barred match between Edge and Randy Orton at WrestleMania Pirate Ship 36. Who's your MVP for tonight, Tony? Because I know it's coming from Raw.
I saved, I saved this specifically for Drew. The boy deserves it.
I'm going to go with Orton. Because, like, I like how he played the conflictedness of it. Like, do I want to do this? Do I not want to do this? Yeah, he deserves it. He's taking my shine. As good as I thought McIntyre was, and I talked about him on my favorite match or moment there earlier, I'm going with Orton here because of the way that he portrayed the character and the fact that this is the Orton that Orton is more comfortable playing than the quasi babyface that he had been playing over the course of the last couple of months. Hey Tony, it's WrestleMania season. You ready?
I'm ready.
This is our fifth year of doing this for WrestleMania season. You know that?
Hey, do you have the spreadsheet of our MVPs and best and worst and all that?
Shit, I'm going to have to go back and listen to some shows. Because of the reformatting that we did, it kind of got messed up.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that we would necessarily would be just... able to... I'm not sure we'd be able to use it because of the reformat that the show underwent in September.
I'm just interested to see who got the most in what we do have. Just kind of see where that landed.
Can I answer that question for you without even thinking about it?
Sure, go ahead.
Drew McIntyre.
Awesome.
The dude's been a standout on Raw basically for the last 6 months. I mean, there might be one person on an episode here, there might be one person on an episode there, but more or less, the most consistent performer on Monday Night Raw over the course of these last 6 months has been the no longer psychopath, but still Scottish, Drew McIntyre.
The reformed psychopath. All right.
He made it out of the psychiatric ward. He's better now. He's taking his medication.
Good for him.
Where can people find you online, Tony?
411mania.com every Monday night. I'm also on Twitter, TonyAcero411. Yeah.
How's the website coming along?
You know, I don't know if you saw it. Well, no, you didn't see. You don't have me on Instagram. I was officially made the general manager of my entire restaurant. That was about 4 or 5 months ago, but I just got the business card, so now it's real. What I've done is restructured my entire week to focus more on that, but still give myself at least 24 hours of creativity. So now officially every Tuesday I will be writing or reading or something in the vein of forcing myself to get this book finished. So I took the website down until I'm 100% ready to shill my book. And then once that happens, you know, I'm going to mention it ad nauseum on this show and every other place that I'm at. So that's where I'm at right now. But the good news is it's coming.
Allow me to kiss your ass real quickly.
Okay, sure.
The freeform poem that you wrote about Kobe Bryant on your Facebook page. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot.
If you guys get a chance, make sure you guys check out Tony on Facebook. Look for Tony Acero on Facebook there. It's one of the very first things that he has posted on his page. He wrote a poem about the lasting effect of watching a guy like Kobe Bryant play and his meaning towards the community as well as towards basketball fandom in general, being that Tony's from the Los Angeles area. It's really well done, man. I really liked it.
Yeah, it hit a lot of us. It really shut down the entire restaurant. You know, we're a sports bar. We didn't know what the right move was. Do we change the channel? Do we put the volume up? We had people crying, you know, while they were eating their brunch. Literally everyone on my staff is, we're in LA. Like, this is, Kobe is not just a basketball player. He hasn't been just a basketball player in years. Very, very big presence just on a day-to-day basis, you know, just from people posting memes just daily, just saying how much he motivates them for now that we're a sports bar, we allow our employees to wear jerseys whenever they want. And
of course, 24-8 is all you're going to see. And, I mean, I think it's even more so now. It's been an interesting, you know, 24 hours. Just if there's any message that we could give, it's one that you've seen everywhere. Literally just call the people that you love, the people that you care about. Just tell them every day, you know. Harry and I, we've never met each other, but we talk to each other almost every Monday for like 5.5, almost 6 years, however long we've been doing this. And it's like if Harry were to wake up in the morning and get in a car and not be able to make it to the night, or me, it would affect us immensely, you know. And that's just two guys talking about wrestling on a weekly basis on the phone. So when you look at your family and you look at the people that matter, like, immeasurably, just it doesn't hurt, it doesn't affect you in any way other than to just be like, yo, I care about you, I love you. And even human to human, man, just anybody that's listening right now or later, just like, just be genuine and just be nice to everybody. Like, smile at someone when you drive past them. You have no idea how powerful that is. Pay for someone's Starbucks, the one, you know, a person behind you. High five people for no reason. Just like, be a beacon of positivity. I know that's hard to believe coming from us because we talk shit about wrestling every day, but I like to think that it comes from a place of love. It's a huge tragedy that you can't. People are gonna look for blame everywhere. There's no one to blame. Only thing you could take out of this is just be a better person.
I debated whether or not we were going to broach this topic tonight, but I figured I wanted to mention the poem that you wrote, because we're not a sports show. I have a sports show that I do on a weekly basis, but it's more football themed, and with next Sunday being Super Bowl Sunday, we'll probably be focusing a lot on that, but we will take a few moments at the start of the show. I saw a bunch of people questioning, like, how can you write such things about somebody that you never met, that somebody that you never got to know, somebody that you never knew personally? Here's the thing. When you are a fan of something, when you find yourself emotionally invested in a product, such as us with wrestling, or sports fans with their franchises, or TV show fans of their particular television show of choice, you feel an emotional connection to what the characters and then the people who play those characters go through. I remember talking to you before about wrestling, about Eddie Guerrero, Tony, but the only time I've ever cried watching professional wrestling was the Eddie Guerrero Hurt video that aired the Monday night after his death, because of the fact of what Eddie meant to me as a fan, that I grew up as Eddie was starting. I got back into wrestling as Eddie was starting his rise, his recovery from his demons in the early 2000s. I got to see the Eddie Guerrero that won the WWE Championship at No Way Out 2004. I got to be there watching Eddie live and in person at house shows, watching Eddie live on pay-per-view whenever there was a special there. I felt like I knew Eddie Guerrero, at least the character, if not necessarily the person. You feel that emotional connection. And it's the same way for sports fans when it comes to their teams. You feel an emotional connection. I can still tell you the very first Buffalo Bills game I ever watched, the comeback against Houston when the Bills were down 35-3 and won the game 41-38 in overtime. That is the day I became a Buffalo Bills fan. I can still tell you that my favorite basketball player is John Stockton from when I was a kid, because I was impressed that a guy looked like me, to be honest, had the ability that Stockton did with the basketball. You develop these connections to these people, these larger-than-life people, that when something happens and you realize that they're gone too soon, they're taken away from you too soon, and you'll never have the chance to experience their talent anymore, you feel a personal loss within yourself as well.
Yeah, man. It's a heavy, heavy, heavy heart. But like I said, the only thing you can get out of this positively is just every day try to – you have no idea the power that you wield as a singular human being. Nobody understands really how – I don't even get it. But the job that I have entails – it allows me to see the kind of power that I have simply just by being genuine, being nice. You could change someone's entire day. You could literally have someone be like, you know what, I was having a shitty day, thank you. You know, just, and that's it. That's literally, you didn't have to do anything other than just be human.
You've heard the golden rule, Tony. treat others the way that you would like to be treated. I think it can be broken down even more simply than that. Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. You know, that's what I love.
He's Tony Acero. She's Liz Puglisi, even though she's no longer with us for this episode. I'm Harry Broadhurst. Somber note to end on, but we ask that you keep those that you care about in mind here and tell the people that you care about them so that way they know while they're with you before you don't have the chance to tell them anymore. You have been listening to The Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network.
Deuces, bitches.
See, I wasn't going to cue you for it because it didn't feel right, but very well. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next Monday night.